Good to see all of you this morning. We are going to continue the study of what is called the We begin our study with the book of Deuteronomy, and this is known usually as Moses' farewell speeches to the children of Israel. His death is imminent. God has assured him that he will not go into the promised land, and he knows that the time for entry into the promised land is very near. We will see how near as we get into this lesson. Before I begin covering the material, I want to just read what is said in the first chapter of Deuteronomy, verse 1. It says, "These be the words which Moses spake unto all Israel, on this side Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain over against the Red Sea, between Paran, Tophel, Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizahab." And then in verse 4, he says, or verse 3, "And it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spake unto the children of Israel, according unto all that the Lord had given him in commandment unto them." And then he begins in verse 6, "The Lord our God spake unto us in Horeb," that's referring to Mount Sinai, "saying, ye have dwelt long enough in this mountain." So that is a little bit of the setting for this lesson that I wanted to put in front of us. For Bill, and who has preached for many years, and for those of you who have done preaching part-time and have taken it seriously, you have to ponder this thought. If you were a preacher, and this was the last time you would be speaking to your audience, and you knew there were things they needed, just how would you leave the business of speaking to? Would you address the things that they needed to hear, or would you try to leave with goodwill and good feelings all around and never deal with the subject at hand? My wife and I were talking before breakfast this morning, or at breakfast this morning, discussing something in the past that we were aware of. And we were discussing a particular preacher, and she said, "You know, I think in the last year he was there, he really came to grips with what the church needed. Sermons got so much more serious, dealing so much more with the issues at hand that the church needed to hear about." Put yourself in the place of Moses. He has been with these people 40 years. He has seen rebellion out of hand many times. He has seen those things dealt with and punished by God. And yet, there have been repeat incidences. You have to wonder, have the people really learned their lessons? Have they really gotten past that, and are they really serious? Well, he's not too sure. It has not been too long ago, just prior to this speech, they were involved in the matter of Baal Peor. And he knew what they were capable of just recently. He had reason to be concerned when Reuben, Gad wanted to stay on the east side of Jordan, and he was apprehensive then as to whether or not they would support their brethren and the rest of the conquest of the land. So that sort of gives us some sense of what this set of lessons will be about. We begin Moses' speeches, and as I've looked at the lesson outline, there will be three classes here on these speeches. This is the first of those three. In this lesson, we will cover two of those speeches. Let's begin here with what I've written relative to the book of Deuteronomy. The book begins with the children of Israel still encamped on the plains of Moab, where they have been for some time, overlooking Jordan, Jericho, just across the Jordan River. As we read in the text, it is now the first day, 11th month of the 40th year since leaving Egypt. 11th month, first day. So how long is it before 40 years are up? About 60 days? 2 months? You got to finish the 11th month and the 12th month. Moses is now 120 years old, very aged. We first met Moses, think about it, as a baby in an ark in the bulrushes. And next we saw him in Pharaoh's house, being raised as a son. After God chose Moses at the burning bush in the land of Midian, Moses, by Jehovah's help, led these people from Egypt. The journey began when he was 80 years old. On that journey, he has pleaded with God for them and with them many times now. With these speeches, he pleads with them again. He reasons with them one last time. He cares for them mightily or greatly. He knows they are soon to cross over into the land, but he cannot go with them. He can go no further onward with them. This is the last help he can give them. God has assured him that soon he must die. This is his last act of leadership for them. This is now a new generation of people. Men of that older generation, as we studied, those 20 years old and older at the time of the rebellion at Kadesh Barnea, that were led out of Egypt, have all died except Joshua and Caleb. This new generation has now been uniquely identified by the second census, which was just completed. This new generation needs to be reminded of the importance of their faithfulness. Of those 19 years old and younger in this audience that he is speaking to, there will be many who have experienced and will remember even the slavery of Egypt, plagues on the Egyptians, and all else that has happened to these people in the near 40 years since. With this new generation, Moses pleads to them to remember to be faithful to God. I would suggest that here we see a picture into the heart of a particular man, a very special man. There was to be none other like him that would arise in Israel until the Messiah came. Cannot help but be touched and moved by what Moses has to say. His message, its completeness, its appropriateness, his earnestness. One can only imagine what he thinks and feels at such a time as this, as he concludes his speeches and God tells him, the people will not remain faithful. They will eventually ignore his warnings. Moses begins the speeches by reviewing events of the near 40-year history of the people up to this point. This to us might seem repetitive until we as Bible students begin to appreciate the audience for Moses and why he addresses things as he does. He has a reason. There's a specific point to be seen from each event he addresses. Moses, overall, clearly intends the topics that he addresses to serve as a reminder of things his audience knew well, things of the last 40 years. These topics were to be a reminder, and I've given this, of lessons they should have learned from their experiences. By the way, Demi knows this, and maybe some of the people involved in the technical world, but there's hardly ever any big project that is ever done, but when it is completed, it is not reviewed for lessons learned. Take in consideration the generals would have reviewed the first Desert Storm War and said, what lessons did we learn? What did we think would happen that did happen? What should we have done that we didn't do? What did we do that we got unexpected results from, and how could we have prevented it? Business I'm in, it is very common to address everything with lessons learned in a very formal way when this venture is over. This is so appropriate to good leadership. He is telling them, there are lessons you should have learned from all that you have experienced. He is also reminding them they must remain faithful to Jehovah their God to receive his blessings, and that he will bless them greatly if they remain faithful. However, if they are not faithful and turn to the idols of the land and serve them, then he can and will remove them from the land they will inherit. For the Old Testament Bible student, and those of you who've been through these foundations classes already know this well, it is nothing short of heartbreaking to study the subsequent history of Israel and see them finally lose their land because of unrepentant wickedness. One cannot help but think of how their history could have been so different if only they had learned the lessons Moses taught them here, these last speeches. As we think, we should consider the points Moses is making to his audience. Think of their richness, how obedience and blessing fit so closely together. For the Israelites then, for us today, let us learn from the lessons they failed to learn. I've got something here in italics, and I think it's very helpful for those of you who will be looking at this further. And that is that in organizing a study to this book, these speeches in particular, Bob has made this comment that the speeches can be broken conveniently into sections where Moses begins with such expressions as, these are the words, or these are the statutes. And various breakpoints can be seen in the book at the references I've given. Yes, sir. The 19 years at the time of the rebellion, which was 38 years earlier. If I didn't make that clear, I hope everyone gets what Jim is asking. The reference to 19 years and younger refers to those 19 and younger at the time of the rebellion. He said those 20 years and older would not enter into the promised land at that point, because he counted the men 20 years and older for men of war, and those that were going to die and did die in the subsequent 38 years. Am I making that a little clearer? I didn't write it clear. And please, if you will, make notes on that. Jim is asking a good question, point of clarification. Anybody else on that point? Moses' first speech, it has a theme, and you will see it referenced several times. He says, be not afraid. Why would he say that? Very logical question. Well, he had experience showing they could be afraid. Second theme he has is you must remain faithful. Now he begins his lesson. He says, you were at Horeb, that is referring to Sinai. Jehovah said you had stayed there long enough. He said, go to the land I swore to give your fathers, speaking of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to their descendants. When your problems became so many for me alone to deal with, then provisions were made that from among your leaders, judges were to be chosen to help me carry the load. They were charged to be fair and honest and to act without fear or favor. By the way, if you are familiar with the book of Ecclesiastes, the book of Proverbs, you will notice that these characteristics of those who judge and those who rule are mentioned more than once. Fairness, honesty, impartiality, not subject to bribes or recognition of status of someone. He said those cases found to be too hard for them would still be brought to me. And I think what he is saying here is that your problems that you were having were very many. They were typical or symptomatic of where you were as a people. And the way they were addressed was not addressed by me alone. I had help. That was a divided responsibility. So, in effect, they couldn't just point to him alone for why they had all of those problems and how things turned out as they did. That might have been some of the reason he had in mind when he said this. But it is sort of injected in here in the middle of this history. He said, we journeyed from Sinai through the terrible wilderness to Kadesh Barnea. There on arrival, I said, you have come to the hill country of the Amorites. Go now, take possession of the land God has promised. Now, this is going back 38 and a half years earlier. You said, let us send men to explore the land. Sent 12 men to the land. They returned with fruits and said, it is a good land that God gives us. You rebelled and murmured and complained and would not go up to take the land. You said, the Lord hates us and has brought us here to die. Where shall we go? And you may remember that back when we were studying in Numbers, I even mentioned going back to choosing a leader and going back to Egypt. But the question was apparently very generic. That was just one of the things they considered. I said, be not afraid. Here's this phrase again. Be not afraid. The Lord will fight for you. He will help as he has done all along. However, the Lord heard your words and was angry. He said that not a one of the men will see the land except for Joshua and Caleb. The Lord was later angry with me and said I would not enter the land. Now, those events are separated by quite some time when the Lord told Moses at the waters of Meribah that he and Aaron would not go into the land. And that was near the end of the 38 years. He said, though, your little ones that you feared would die in the way, they will go into the land. Then you decided to go fight anyway. You said you had sinned. But I warned you against that course of action, but you went anyway. You were driven back and defeated badly. When afterwards we had turned around and traveled for a long time, and this is just a very short phrase referring to all the years of wilderness wandering and it coming to an end, he said, God again said, you have stayed here long enough. Go north to the land. We traveled toward Edom, but had to go around because it was Esau's inheritance. It was an inheritance that was out of the land of the giants that the Lord had given him. We couldn't go through Moab either. It too was a land of giants that the Lord had given them. We'd also passed by the land of Ammon, a land the Lord had given them, and it had been a land of giants too. God, the point he's making is God has given lands of giants to them, that is, Esau, Moab, and Ammon, and they conquered those giants, but in spite of this, you were afraid. Now, do not be afraid, he says. So get up, he is telling his audience, and take your journey into the land now. And he's talking about going across Jordan. They are to get up and proceed. God has already given you the land of Sihon, of the Amorites. You fully conquered him, took his land, and also the land of Bashan of Og. The Lord delivered him to you and all his 60 cities. Now, Og was a giant, too. Why, his bed was 13.5 feet long and 6 feet wide, and the frame was of iron. And the Bible even makes mention that that bed resided in the land, in the hands of some of the people there, even at the time he made this speech. He said, note, Moses is telling them that while they had been afraid of walled cities and giants, they had in fact already faced them, and the Lord had given them victory in spite of that. Therefore, be not afraid. I told Joshua, you have seen with your own eyes what the Lord has done to these two kings, Sihon and Bashan. Even so will he do to the nations where you are going. Do not be afraid. Now, he's telling his audience what he has already told Joshua, and telling them that he's told Joshua not to be afraid. So they should understand they will have a leader who has been admonished in this regard as well. Then he says something else. He says, I pleaded with Jehovah, saying, you have shown me your greatness and your strong hand. That is what you can do. There is none other can do what you can do and what you have done. Do let me cross over and see that good land. This is really interesting to me. I never thought about how much Moses must have cared to go and how urgently he insisted or desired, made it known he wanted to go. But then he said the Lord responded to him and he said he would not. And he told me to speak to him no more on this matter. He has told me to go to the top of Mount Pisgah, and that is really Mount Nebo, and see the land that you will soon cross over into. He has told me to charge Joshua and encourage him, because he will lead the people to inherit the land. He's getting them all informed about this transition of leadership and how everything is going to be closed out. He will not go. Cannot go. God has told him he won't, and even told him to speak no more to ask to go. Now, Israel, pay careful attention to the laws given you so you can live and possess the land. Do not add to this word nor take from it. Do exactly what the law says. Reminds you of something else. Several times in the Bible, turn neither to the right nor to the left. I'd add to these words that close the book of Revelation. He says, remember Baal Peor and those he destroyed that day. Those who were faithful, they remain alive today. I have taught you all the Lord has given. Keep his commandments and statutes. They are the source of wisdom and understanding in the sight of all men. I think this is a very interesting statement, that the words that had been delivered to these people by Moses from God, these commandments and statutes, were of such a nature that all men would see and hear of those laws and statutes and commandments, and they would take note of it and understand that that was the difference between those people and the people in the world. rest of the world. He said, they will ask, what other nation has a God that is so accessible to them where they can call upon Him? This is unique. In all of the pagan worship, there was no idol that was accessible that allowed people to call upon Him and make petitions. Idol worship was one where most idols were generally seen as very finicky, very capricious, and you never knew what to expect. They weren't predictable. Yet God is accessible and one can call upon Him, a very special thing, and He's calling this to their attention. He says, do not let these words depart from your heart. Teach them to your children. The Lord has made known to you His covenant, even the two tables of stone that He wrote. When time has passed, you make graven images and do evil, then I call heaven and earth to witness, you will soon perish from this land. Jehovah will scatter you. Ask of the days that have gone before. Ask this question. Has ever such an amazing thing been done? Has any people heard the voice of God speaking from the midst of the fire and lived? Has God ever before acted to take for Himself a nation from within a nation? These things were shown to you that you might believe He is God, that there is no one like Him. Caused you to hear His voice out of heaven, to see His great fire upon the earth. And that could refer to the literal fire at the giving of the law. It could refer to a figurative sense in that He is a great fire that destroys and nothing can withstand Him or resist Him. So they had seen Him at work in that sense too as a great fire in their conquest of their enemies. It's not clear, but He makes it very clear they had seen His great fire upon the earth. Because He loved your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, He has chosen you and brought you out of Egypt. He will drive out nations greater than you for you to inherit the land. Notice this in particular. They will be nations greater than you, and He will drive them out so that you can inherit the land. This day, Moses says, be aware and remember that God is in heaven above and on the earth beneath. There is none like Him. And I want you to take note of that last phrase, there's none like Him. We're going to touch on that again in the second speech with something that is said. Moses' second speech, after telling them in the first speech to not be afraid, to be of courage and to trust God, remember what He's done. His second concern is, beware lest you forget to obey the Lord. Chapter 4, which ends this first speech and begins the second one, begins this way. This is the law Moses set before the children of Israel, which he spake after they came forth from Egypt. And Deuteronomy 5:1 says, which I speak into your ears this day, that you may live, that you may learn them, that is the law and statutes, that you may keep them and do them. Then he repeats again what we know and understand as being the Ten Commandments delivered at Mount Sinai. He says, hear, O Israel, the word spoken from the mount that He wrote on the two tables of stone. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And He says, you shall have no other gods before me. There will be no idols. Shall not worship or do service to them. And I believe this refers to the fact you could very well have not had an idol. But if your neighbor or your friend had one, you could have still done worship and service to that idol. That's not allowed either. So you should have no idols, nor should you engage in the worship and service to them, even if you don't have an idol. You shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. He says they are to observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. 6 days shall you do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest. Honor your father and mother. I was writing on this last night, I couldn't help but think about how complete these are to not only help them in their service to God, to be obedient to Him and Him alone, but what He is doing here to make life better on earth, to make homes what they ought to be. Honor your father and mother. You shall not murder. Do no murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. Shall not bear false witness. Shall not covet. And next, I believe, covet what is your neighbor's. When you heard the voice of God on the mount, you were afraid lest you die. You said, I should go and hear what Jehovah had to say and tell it to you, and that you would do it. Jehovah then said to Moses, I will tell you all the commandments they are to obey, so that they may extend their stay in the land. Now, the Lord wants you to fear Him, so you will obey Him all your life, and that all your children and their descendants will obey Him. This is a very far-reaching thing. He wants them to be obedient. He wants it taught. He wants their children, their children's children, to be faithful and obedient, so that things will go well for you and that you will increase greatly. Listen, O Israel, Jehovah our God is one. Therefore, love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and mind. Keep His words ever in your heart. Teach them diligently to your children. Talk of them in your house and in the way. When the Lord brings you into this land that He promised your fathers, you will enjoy houses and cities that you did not build, and you will enjoy vineyards and crops, I think there's olive trees, that you did not plant. Be careful then in your ease and comfort to remember to worship Jehovah only. Do not test God and see if He will do to you as He has said He will do if you do not serve Him only. When your son in time asks you, what is the meaning of all these commandments? Tell him you were slaves and God delivered you and brought you here, and that you are to obey these commandments, that it may be well with you and the land. It will be righteousness to you if you do all God has commanded. This is a series of things here I find very interesting. When God brings you to the land and drives out your enemies before you, you must completely wipe out these enemies. You are not to compromise them with them, to show them mercy, to make treaties with them, or to intermarry with them. If you intermarry with them, they will turn you away, and you will follow after their idols, and God will come quickly and take you out of this, or take you from this land. I have an incomplete sentence there. Therefore, their idols destroyed their idols, their altars, and their Asherah poles. I did a little bit of looking at this, and I want to just what I have here in the brackets is a synopsis of what Bob had. He said Asherah poles were the female fertility counterpart to Baal, and worship of them corrupted the morals of the people. I tried to find out more in the Bible dictionary, and I did some online looking, and actually what is there is very skimpy as to what these Asherah poles were. But it seems that this was a female deity common in the land of Canaan. It varied in its form from nation to nation. Sometimes it was called Asherah. It seems to have been very closely associated with Astaroth or Astoreth. But these were poles that were cut from trees and carved or trimmed in such a way, and they worshiped them. Dictionary said that sometimes that in early days they had found steels made out of stone. This is sort of a pole or post, if you will. Those were their idols, but they were throughout the land. And in one of the cases, one of the cities, I believe it is, in Bashan, that they actually had a big city named after Ashtaroth. And it was a center of worship. And when they took the land, this became one of the Levitical cities. So this was all around them. Perversion that seems to have happened was that when the people came into the land and were worshiping Jehovah, they also set up a parallel worship of this Asherah. They would build an altar, and they would either put it where there was an Asherah or put an Asherah pole with the altar. And they worshiped God, Jehovah God, they said, and at the same time worshiped this Asherah pole because she was the mother of all living. So they had a place for her in their scheme of things. And since it was all around, they just very smoothly brought this into their worship, compromised their worship, and fell into all of the things associated with that worship. It was a very morally corrupt worship. Moses said, "You are a holy people. You were chosen by the Lord to be His special people. He did not choose you because you were a great nation or great in number. You were the fewest and least of peoples. Remember who you deal with. God, He is merciful to 1,000 generations. He will not hesitate to punish the disobedient." And that should be a matter of record. They should understand now. He says, "Do not be afraid. Remember what God has done for you already. Jehovah is in your midst. He is great and He is awesome. Do not even desire the gold or the silver from the idols that are in the land." Remember the experiences of these nearly 40 years now. God placed you in all these different situations to see if you would obey Him or not. About that statement. Your life sometimes hard, filled with trials. Ever possible that God has allowed those to answer the same question, see if you would obey Him or not. So, God disciplined you as a father trains a son. During all this time, your clothes did not grow old and your feet did not swell. That's an interesting statement. They were on their feet, marching, traveling. In fact, He's saying, you just didn't age during that time. Those things come with age. Your feet did not swell. When you come into the land and He abundantly supplies all your needs, remember to bless Him. Give thanks for all He has done for you. Beware lest you forget Jehovah in the land and say to yourself, I have gotten all these things by myself. I tell you that if you forget God, you will perish from this land, even as these people will perish from this land before you. When you cross over Jordan, remember God is a raging fire before you and will utterly destroy all before you, and none will be able to resist. When you conquer the land, do not say, it is for my righteousness that God did this. It is not for your righteousness, but it is because of their wickedness who were in the land before you. It can't be your righteousness, for you are a hard-headed people. He would have destroyed you at the mount with the golden calf, but I pleaded for you. The Lord heard me. Then at Taberah, at Massah, at Kibroth Hatteva, you provoked Him again. Then there was your rebellion at Kadesh Barnea. You have been a rebellious people ever since I have known you. Why would this man say this? Seems rather strange. This is a new generation. I think that he has to have some concerns that rebellion that had shown itself so many times, was it still there? Had it been fully cured? But hope so. Want to be positive, but there is this danger. Right on up to the end, for 38 years, they have been rebellious, as he shows. Does any of it still exist among them? So he is telling them just how it is. This next statement, he says, therefore, since you are a rebellious and stiff-necked people, prepare your hearts as they should be. Do not be stiff-necked. Jehovah your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, and He is the great God and pays no attention to one's social status. Takes no bribes. He looks after the fatherless and the widows and loves the sojourner. You should love the sojourner because you once sojourned in Egypt. Next statement is, I think, interesting. God is the only thing worthy of your praise. Only thing. Fear Him. Serve Him. I am not speaking to those yet to come who have not seen all of this. I am speaking to you who have seen all the great works Jehovah did. This land to which you are going is not like Egypt. It prospers because of its bountiful rains. If you obey God, it will have its rains and it will prosper. If you rebel, He will shut up the skies. There will be no crops. That phrase, iron above and bronze beneath, I think here he reverses it and says it'll be bronze above and iron beneath. But he says, you will perish from the land. Do your utmost to remember all these things. Impress your words, these words on your hearts. Keep these words before you at all times. Teach them to your children. Today I set before you a blessing and a curse. You will be blessed if you hear Jehovah. You will be cursed if you refuse to listen and turn away to other gods. When you get into the land, this is the land of promise across the Jordan, you will set the blessing on Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal, so they will be before you. That will be discussed more fully when we look at chapter 27 and the arrangements made to take part of the tribes on one mount, part of them on another, and they will say these things out loud for all the people to hear and be reminded of. But we'll look at that more when we get there. Appreciate your attention. Jimmy had a question, a good question. I hope it helped. If for some reason you find that there's something here that I've said or you need clarification on, we haven't had time to address it here, but don't hesitate to ask me. I'll do my best to outside of class with you and bring it up again and correct it in the next class. Thank you for your attention.